We stood around trying to think of something to see, like one often does at art shows. The paintings were very big canvases, strong, realistic as photographs, and somehow, strangely out of keeping here, you wondered why. And then we walked across the mall, a beautiful feature of this campus, a long alley of trees, beautiful planting underneath, a centerpiece of a fountain, the gift of a family who had lost a child. They had a closeness to Southwestern, and they wanted something living, expressive, as a memorial. It was. Later at luncheon, I was so glad when I got a chance to thank them, as I know many people have, to whom this campus has been a part of their lives. We arrived in front of the Cody Library and took our seats for the part of the program that was the opening of the Edward Clark Collection of Texana. Dr. Charles Protho, the chairman of the Board of Trustees, presided, and I sat by Ed Clark on the front row with Ann close by, and the officials and trustees and benefactors of the school lined up to do honor to Ed. He was delightful. The collection is over 2,400 volumes of Texana, some of it very rare, one of the two best collections in private hands, and I'd felt a distinct twinge of envy when I'd first learned that it had gone to Southwestern. Ed told her he'd spent over 35 years collecting it. Now Austin and Houston and Rusk and Henderson had become his daily companions, and though I've searched three continents, I've never found better ones. He had on a navy tie with an inconspicuous Lone Star flag on it, and that was the only inconspicuous thing about him. He is a unique person. Then we went inside to see some of the collection, which really should be enjoyed in a comfortable chair by a fire at leisure. There were intriguing things I would have loved to have looked at. Davy Crockett's journals. But my frequent predicament in crowds, I spent more time lifting my head to smile into the camera or to shake hands with some friend, and often here it was an old one from Lyndon's days of representing the 10th District, than in looking at the exhibits. We went up to the second floor, and I put on my cap and gown, the black one with the beautiful white velvet that the University of Texas had given me. And then we joined in the procession and marched to the University Chapel. And here I was very aware that this was a church school. It had a sort of Methodist stamp on it, with stained glass windows and a real pulpit. As I looked into the faces of the students, I wondered how they compared with those that I had seen at Middlebury and Williams and Yale. Younger and a bit more innocent, perhaps. More country, yes. Wholesome. A beard was a rarity here. There were one or two. I feel fiercely that in the rest of the years of my life, I want to help make available to this good raw material the same sort of opportunities that they have at those best Eastern schools. Two bishops led us off in the religious part of the service, and then very soon, President Durwood Fleming introduced me, and I went to the pulpit at his request and made my brief 7 or 8 minute speech, reminiscing about Southwestern, where Lyndon had received his first degree back in 1943, the early years of this 100-year-old institution, and got a small ripple of laughter when I recalled that one of its ancestor colleges had charged $180 for tuition, board, room, and laundry for 10 months. Parents take note. But the bulk of the speech was about how far-flung are the footprints of Southwestern. All over the world, Peace Corps volunteers, a builder in Jakarta or Dahomey, there were the Browns, a Methodist minister in Vietnam, it turns out lots of missionaries to go all over the world, or an ambassador, there was Ed Clark right before us. It was low-key, really just a gracious thank you for the honor they were paying me. My fifth honorary degree. And then there was the real convocation address by Mr. William Beinecke, chairman of the board of Sperry Hutchinson and Ed Clark's friend. I found myself quite in tune with much that he said. He took a rap at today's habit of sloganizing, of cynicism and labeling, because it takes more trouble to think than just to label. And then came the awarding of the degrees. All the time, I was looking at Lucy and Pat in the front row, her face so intense with interest, so loving. I'm really stirred with pride in her. I received mine, then Mr. Beinecke of New York City, and at this point, one of the funniest things happened. President Durwood Fleming, in awarding the degree, called him William Sperry Hutchinson, recovered after half a second, and added the word Beinecke. While my stomach knotted up in compassion for the poor man, Dr. Fleming, I know he must have wished the earth could swallow him up. And in a peculiar Freudian way, this explained to me what I had rather figured all along, that Ed had arranged this honorary degree for Mr. Beinecke, with the possibility that he just might be a benefactor to this little school. And then Mr. Grogan Lord received his degree. And the alma mater rang out, and we marched to the chapel and to our cars. The sun had broken through the clouds during the convocation, and I had tried to catch Mrs. Lord's eye to reassure her, because she was having 400 people in her backyard for lunch. And all morning long, she'd been going through the logistics of how to move the lunch into the cafeteria if the skies opened up. Golly, how I sympathized with her. But it came out bright and beautiful. It's a handsome old house, about 100 years old, with white columns, and the later addition of some Tiffany glass, Victorian times, I suppose, an oval near the front door, a spacious interior with homey old furniture, and an absolutely beautiful backyard dominated by an enormous pecan tree in the middle. There was an orchestra and bright striped awnings, round tables, and no drinks. This was Methodist territory. There was a long head table at which I sat with our hosts, and Ann and Ed Clark, and the Beineckes, and Mr. Protho, and of course Dr. and Mrs. Fleming, and the Bishop, and George and Alice Brown. For me, it had that special warmth that can only come from being surrounded with people you've known for years and years. Lennon had represented Georgetown and Williamson County and the 10th District for 12 years, and for 12 more as senator, we had known and worked with at least three-fourths of the people in the gathering. And it was a time of good conversation, too. Our host said he'd been worrying about whether to move the party inside. It looked like rain any minute. He'd mentioned it to one of the bishops, and the bishop had said, "Gamble." I spent much of my time talking to Mr. Beinecke, whom I found quite interesting, and who asked me in a very forthright way, "What do you think about Vietnam?" I appreciated his frankness. He speaks from the position of a man with one son in Yale and one fighting in Vietnam, and I tried my best to explain Lyndon's viewpoint. Not many people come out so forthright these days. In fact, it's been curiously interesting to see how my friends approach me, react to me. Many of them avoid the subject like the plague, but almost, I think, their very silence thunders. And then there are acquaintances or strangers who give you an emotionally sympathetic look and say, "God bless you, keep strong," and I am divided between heartfelt thanks and curious embarrassment. Our host introduced me and asked me to say a few words, and I looked around at the audience and said, "I felt like I was in that TV show, This Is Your Life." I saw Paul Bolton, whom I'd worked since about 1946. And over there was my minister at St. David's, Reverend Sumner's, where I'd been going to church forever. And Judge Stone, one of Lyndon's 9 opponents in his race for Congress back in 1937, and since then, for a long time, our good friend. And Don Thomas and Jesse Kellum and A.W. Morrison, Senator Dorsey Hardeman, that venerable politician, Mrs. Weinert, Eloise Thornberry and Beryl Pickle. Of course, I didn't call everybody's name, but enough to paint the picture of the warmth and fun this gathering was for me, and also how proud I was to have our friends from the East, Mr. Beinecke and those with him, see some of the people that made Texas what it was. Mr. Beinecke spoke, and Ed Clark gave a great performance. He was hilarious. He said as he looked around, he could easy pick himself 12 pallbearers and 12 honorary pallbearers, and there'd still be plenty of folks left that would qualify. It was his unique blend of humor and substance. Absolutely nobody like him. And then Dr. Durwood Fleming made, to me, quite an unexpected recoupment in his few words of greeting. He said, "After having made the mistake in Mr. Beinecke's name, I wondered what word I would substitute when I came to Mr. Grogan Lord." I felt good about him. When it was over, I walked through the crowd, hugging and kissing every other person, and then back in the car with Simone. Lucy and Pat had to hurry away a little earlier. Back at Lucy's, I joined Phyllis Nugent, and we went over to Mrs. Johnson's old apartment to see the progress of the redecorating. It's fresh and clean and nice, and I'm glad they'll have it. It's rather vanilla, and I always wish on a project like this that I had days and days to devote to it so I could turn out something I loved. And then, back at Lucy's, I simply climbed in bed and read and rested, made some telephone calls, planned my next day's work, but with abandon, goofed off. Lucy came in and sat by me, and we had one of our long, good talks. Lucy expresses herself with remarkable freshness and depth, and she's acquiring grace of spirit and understanding. Finally, I got up, took the clippers in hand, the bread and butter present to Lucy last month, and trimmed her roses out in the front yard, cutting off all the dead ones. Then Lucy and Pat and Lynn and I drove out to Youngblood's and had an enormous dinner of fried chicken, with Lynn nodding in the high chair, his round, bald head sinking lower and lower onto his little arm and his curled-up fist. And I laughingly said we ought to put a bottle of beer in front of him and take his picture. I left the young folks and drove to the ranch and was at home in bed at 9:30. It's one of the luxuries of these trips down here. Early to bed is a sheer luxury to me.